This is Cardinal Francis George. I invite you to join me for the next few minutes to reflect with Father Robert Barron on the Word of God, which is the Word on Fire. Word on Fire Catholic Ministries is a nonprofit ministry at the forefront of Catholic evangelization, using new media to spread the faith on every continent. Father Barron challenges us to open our hearts to the Word on Fire, which is God's Word of love for each of us. If our hearts are open, the Lord can change and transform us so that we might speak with love about the one who is love. The global benefactors of Word on Fire, with the support of the Archdiocese of Chicago, now present Word on Fire.
Peace be with you. Friends, what an extraordinary coincidence, well, providence really, that the 10th anniversary of September 11th, 2001, one of the darkest days in our history, falls this year on a Sunday, and that the readings for this Sunday center around forgiveness. It gives us a very good opportunity to reflect on the nature of forgiveness. And I found in my years of ministry, it's something that people really struggle with because everyone's got someone they're mad at. They've got some resentment, and they wonder what to do with this language of forgiveness. Well, let's get at it first by recalling the events of September 11th to get the texture of that day back into our minds, into our hearts. I was at my computer early at that, in that crystal clear early autumn morning. I got a call from a friend saying a plane just flew into one of the World Trade Center towers. And my first thought was it was a small plane, like the one that I think back in the 1930s, you know, flew into the Empire State Building just by accident. That was kind of a freakish thing to be happening. So I went to my room, turned on the TV, and I saw what had in fact taken place, that a jet airliner had flown into the building. My first thought was not that the building would collapse. It was, how in the world will they put that fire out? I thought, how would the firefighters ever get up there? How would they get water to that spot? That's what was on my mind. I then walked across the campus. I had a class that day teaching a Doctor of Ministry class. And I got to the classroom, and there was a TV in the room, and it was on. Of course, everyone glued to it watching the events unfold. And I remember with the class watching the towers come down live. And it's like, you know, they say when Native people saw the Spaniards arriving and they looked out and they saw the ships, you know, coming to the shore. But since they had no frame of reference, it's as though they didn't really see them. They didn't know how to understand what they were seeing. I had that experience watching those towers come down. I was like, what just happened? It was so far from my imagination that the buildings themselves would come down. That I was just sort of puzzled. Afterwards, of course, we sat down and the class reflected on this event. I remember I said, I think things just got about 10,000 times worse in the world. You know, I thought of the Middle East and all of our tensions and all of our problems. I thought, with this event, things just got 10,000 times worse. There's a particular image that's burned in my mind from September 11th, and obviously all the ones that we know, the towers coming down, the planes flying into the building. The one that stays in my mind, though, is of an older, I think she was a Palestinian woman, and she was on the news, they caught her, and she was out in the street dancing for joy in the wake of this terrible event. Somehow that just stays in my mind as an almost defining image from that terrible day. Well, not only did Osama bin Laden and those wicked men who hijacked the planes put to death about 3,000 people, they did that, which was, of course, wicked enough, but they also permanently haunted and terrified the rest of the world. We all feel this in our bones, don't we? We sense it concretely every time we go to the airport and have to take our shoes off and our belts and submit ourselves to all these body searches, etc. We know that the whole world was terrified. It was changed for the worse that awful day. I'm rehearsing the events of that day to make the point that we are legitimately angry about September 11th. Absolutely. Thomas Aquinas said that anger is the natural response to injustice. Think of Martin Luther King's anger at racial inequality in America. I mean, King wouldn't be King unless you pointed to his anger at that injustice. Think of Gandhi's anger at British imperialism. Think of John Paul II's anger at communist oppression. Think, of course, of Jesus' own anger at the money changers in the temple. Anger is a kind of passion to set things right. And that's why we can speak legitimately of God's anger. Not that God's going into in and out of emotional states. It means that God has this steady passion to set things right. And so we feel that, too, legitimately in the presence of great injustice. September 11th was a massive injustice. And so individually and collectively, we legitimately feel an anger about it. Can anger lead us to prosecute criminals? Absolutely. It's a passion to set things right. Does it lead us to change laws and to enforce them? Absolutely. To track down offenders, to punish them in jail? Yes, indeed. All of that is legitimate. But Aquinas says there's the deadly sin of anger. And now that's something different. Legitimate anger is the passion to set things right. It's the proper response to injustice. But the deadly sin of anger, he says, is an exaggerated or irrational desire for vengeance. Let me say that again. The deadly sin of anger is an exaggerated or irrational desire for vengeance. Now, if I can put it this way, it is anger untethered to love. Love is willing the good of the other. And the point is, your anger, no matter how legitimate it is, no matter how justified it is, must always be tethered to love. The desire to help and to heal the other. Yes, even and especially the other who has done some great injustice. Go back to the examples I just gave. One of Martin Luther King's great virtues was he didn't want to destroy white America. He wanted to redeem it. See, that distinguishes King from many others at that time, who did succumb, I would say, to the deadly sin of anger, whose perhaps legitimate concern about racial oppression led to an irrational desire for vengeance. King didn't have that. What he wanted to do through his nonviolence was to redeem white America. Was he angry at injustice? Yes, but it was an anger tethered to love. Gandhi, the same thing. Did Gandhi want to destroy the British? No, no. He was angry at their oppression and their injustice. But as he famously said, I want the British to leave as our friends. He wanted to redeem them, not to destroy them. Or John Paul II. Did he want the communists dead? Did he want the communists wiped out? No, no. He was as angry as anybody at their oppression and their injustice, but he wanted them redeemed. He wanted them to become better people. In all these cases, see, anger was in service of love. It was under the aegis of love. It was disciplined by love. The deadly sin of anger is when it's not so tethered, so tied, and so disciplined. So again, this is why it's so important to see forgiveness. Now here's our topic. Forgiveness has nothing to do with willful ignorance. Oh, you know, I don't know. I just forget about injustice. It's nothing to do with wishing away evil. Nothing to do with burying one's head in the sand. No, no. Forgiveness assumes a frank and realistic knowledge of wrongs committed. See, that's why I rehearse September 11th, not as though you need to be reminded of it. We all have these visceral feelings. But see, forgiveness assumes that frank and realistic knowledge of wrongs committed. It's also why forgiveness is by no means irreconcilable with anger. In fact, it practically presumes anger, as I've been describing it. But forgiveness is indeed irreconcilable with a desire for vengeance. it is indeed irreconcilable with the deadly sin of anger. Now, with all this in mind, we'll glance at the readings for today. How beautifully Sirach describes the deadly sin of anger in our first reading. Listen. Wrath and anger are hateful things, yet the sinner hugs them tight. That's so good, isn't it? This is the kind of anger that actually feeds the ego and its needs. Do you see why? People will happily cling to their resentments because remembering and rehearsing the offenses of others makes them feel morally superior. Remember what she did to me? Do you remember that? You remember that time we got together and she said those things to me? Do you remember what he did 10 years ago? I'll never forget that. You see what you're doing there is you're hugging your resentment tight. You're holding it tight because you need it to affirm your own moral superiority. As the offense is recalled, the ego is fed. Now, we can extrapolate from this, too, to political and cultural issues. You remember what those Saudis and those Muslim radicals did to us on September 11th? See how that can make us feel superior as a culture. Okay, so what's the right attitude? What is forgiveness? Well, one way to get at it is to say this. Whatever the problem happens to be, we should say this is our problem, not just yours. Whatever it is, personal, cultural, political, whatever the problem is, it's our problem, not just yours. That was the genius of a king or Gandhi or John Paul. It's our problem. Now, mind you, I'm not being wimpy here. I'm not engaging in blame America first politics. I'm not denying for a minute that people really do objectively bad things. I hope that's really clear. But I am saying that no matter what the issue, no matter what the offense, we are in it together. Why? Because love must always be the foundation of everything. It's our problem, meaning I'm angry at what you did. I'm angry at the injustice, but I want you to be redeemed. I don't want you to be destroyed. To forgive, therefore, is not to forget. It's not to erase blame. It is to keep one's legitimate anger always tethered to love. Listen, it's a willingness to get down and do the hard work of drawing an offender back to the circle of the community. It's a refusal to give up on a wicked person. That's forgiveness. Can I be angry? Yep. But you can't cling to your anger in such a way that love is undermined. And this is why forgiveness in the mind of Jesus is a kind of absolute. Peter says in the gospel, "How often should I forgive my brother? As many as seven times?" And Jesus answers, "I say to you, not seven times, but 70 times, seven times." What that means in that Aramaic idiom is, over and over and over and over again, never failing, never giving up. Friends, it's good for us on this 10th anniversary of one of the worst days in American history to reflect on justice, anger, forgiveness, and how those fit together, all under the aegis of love. And God bless you.
I hope you were moved today by the word on fire. I pray that together we might become a people on fire with love for God and neighbor here in Chicago and wherever these words are heard. Until we join Father Barron again next week, I'm Cardinal Francis George, and I pray that God will bless you and those you love.
I'm Father Robert Barron. Our new Catholicism documentary series and study program can now be pre-ordered online. Go to CatholicismPreorder.com. Will you help me introduce this one-of-a-kind film series and catechetical program to your parish, school, and diocese? Journey around the world and deep into the faith in this 10-part, 10-hour epic adventure. Learn more at CatholicismPreorder.com.